Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from EchoBase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor!
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Come out of here on the floor! Honey, let's rock some more, yeah! Now, when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out!
Jackie Wilson and Mr. Excitement, Johnny D. Good morning,
Stevie. I got you. Have to bear with me. I have a, you know, they call it Vegas throat. I think I have Derby throat.
Yeah, you and Steve Asmussen, who couldn't come on this morning because his throat is KO'd. That's hysterical. Yeah, he's Steve later in the tomorrow or Wednesday. That's funny.
Yeah, a lot of people say they don't know if I was yelling during the race or yelling at the stewards after the race that caused this to happen.
Well, Johnny, start wherever you'd like. We have this circumstance where, you know, we've got so many things that we'd love to talk about, but you're obligated to, you know, deal with, you know, what is going to be a historic incident in the history of this race.
Yeah, I think something that's probably lost in all the hubbub is what an outstanding race Maxim Security ran. Just an awesome race. I mean, he, you know, despite his annex at the top of the stretch, after that, he looked like he was done. Whether it was Code of Honor on the inside or Country House on the outside, one of those two looked like they had him. And he just kept digging and actually opened up again in the stretch, continued on to an emphatic victory, really. So I don't think we're kind of losing sight of that a little bit. I mean, we all have to talk about what happened, that's for sure, and I will in a minute. But I thought that was very impressive. Also, the emergence of Flavien Prat as one of the top young riders in the game. He's, you know, anyone who follows California racing is familiar with his riding ability, and he needs no introduction. But nationally, it's nice to see him, you know, get on that that major stage and do something notable. He is a quality rider. He can ride grass. He can ride dirt. He can ride short and long, and he's young. And then it's great to see Johnny Velasquez, kind of the dean of the jocks room now, other than John Court, of course. But Johnny's, you know, his accomplishments are legendary. To watch him getting the run of the rails in the Kentucky Derby and threatening for the win. And then also to notice that the horses, the winners, well, the original winner, Maximum Security, came out of the Express Bet Florida Derby. Code of Honor out of the Express Bet Florida Derby, winner of the Express Bet Fountain of Youth, both coming out of Gulfstream. You've had Country House coming out of Arkansas, and Improbable, originally fifth, also out of Arkansas. And Tacitus, who, by virtue of a disqualification, snapped that 15-year 0-0-0 for 33 wood drought. And he moved from fourth into third, so he snapped that little piece of trivia. Game winner, excuse me, I think from now on when they write the conditions of the race, they're going to have to write in there. For example, in the Derby, they should have written the race is 1.25 miles, except for game winner, who will have to run 1.5 miles. That's pretty much every race he runs in, he runs quite a bit further than everybody else. That's just, it should be just written into the conditions. So you have, you know, all of those things, I think, needed to be kind of brought to the forefront, even though the discussion of the decision, as you said, is historic. And I've enjoyed listening to everyone. It's great to listen to, I was going to say intelligent people discuss something intelligently, but let's just say intelligent discussion about the races. And everyone has a slightly different take, which is, again, extremely interesting. And, you know, I ran into an interesting spot because right after the Kentucky Derby, you know, they had this inquiry, and I waited for the inquiry, waited, and, you know, I was running to my 45th high school reunion. So I ran right after the Derby. I got there, and, you know, my phone, of course, was blowing up. And, of course, everyone at the event, you know, they know I'm involved in horse racing. They're not really quite sure what I do, but, you know, they're normal fans. And they had questions. They wanted to know what, you know, and obviously since then, I've had people approach me. What happened? What is this all about? My wife got a text from one of her clients asking, well, you know, what was this all about? You'll have to explain this to me next week.
Yep.
Because people don't, right? I mean, you probably have been bombarded.
Yep.
People, and so in an effort to kind of describe to them what happened, I started off by saying, look, imagine Tom Brady throwing a game-winning Super Bowl touchdown pass, and there's a flag on the play. And we come back, and we find out there's holding, and the play comes back. Well, we all know that, right? We all understand that. We all get it. I said, well, now, think about this. Tom Brady throws a game-winning touchdown pass. Two defensive linemen complain to the referee. One says he was held, and he was not going to sack Brady, but he says he was held. He's not close enough, even without the holding, to sack him. Another defensive lineman claims he was chop-blocked. He also was not going to sack Tom Brady on the play, but he says he was chop-blocked, and that's extremely dangerous. It's been outlawed in the NFL. Extremely dangerous. The referee then listened to these two complaints and decide to go to the video replay. And because it's the Super Bowl, there is incredible coverage. Every player has his own camera, seemingly, just about. And so the referees clearly see the hold, and they clearly see the chop block, and they both occurred. Now you've got a decision. Do you restuff the confetti back in the in the boxes at the top of the stadium? Because now all bedlam has broken loose. The players, do you go to the locker room and call the players back out? Do you interrupt Tom Brady's "I'm going to the Super Bowl" moment? I mean, what do you do in that situation? Clear fouls occurred on the play, but you know what? It didn't really change the play. So was one dangerous? Yes, very dangerous. Chop blocks are very dangerous, but it didn't affect who was going to, what was going to happen. This guy was going to throw a touchdown pass to win the Super Bowl. No matter what, if the chop block occurred or it didn't occur, he was going to win the Super Bowl with that pass. The holding, yeah, he held him. But this guy wasn't going to get to him anyway. He was going to complete the pass. So I explained it to them in those terms. Do you call it by the book? These fouls occurred. Let's go. We're going to do it over again. I guess a better thing would be, well, now it's fourth down, so now it's on top of that, it's now the other team's ball. Well, they would get the play over. It doesn't actually work out. But the question is, as an official, you see the fouls. There were fouls. And I don't think any of your guests so far today has said that wasn't a foul. That was a foul. Whether it was Luis Sias drifting out to infringe on the competition, to interfere. He didn't want to interfere with them, but to kind of haze them, or whether the horse ducked, whatever reason, it happened. There was a foul. But oftentimes, we hear it all the time. It didn't affect the outcome. The horse who won the race was going to win the race. And I've always hated that. I understand it, but I've always hated it because how do you know? I like to tell the stewards, how do you know who was going to win the race? Did you never see Zenyatta run? I mean, you could stop her races. She's not going to get up. There's no way. Did you see the Dubai World Cup? Arrogant? He wasn't going to win the race. I mean, it happens. So don't tell me it didn't affect the race. However, we also know that there are times when you can tell it didn't affect the race. And this was one of those times. And I think all of the previous guests also outlined that this was one of those times where the winner, Bill Mott knows it. Flavian Pratt knows it. That they weren't interfered with. They weren't getting to the winner. They weren't going to change things. They were the beneficiaries of a penalty flag. Oh, that's okay too. That's part of the game. So, and to anybody that says, well, look, that's a foul on Wednesday in the fourth race at Podunk Downs. It's a foul on Kentucky Derby Day in the Kentucky Derby. No, no, and no. That's my opinion. And why? Because there is nothing in this day, Kentucky Derby Day, that in the race, the Kentucky Derby itself, there is nothing that is like it. There's nothing similar to it. There's the crowd, the horses, it's the best sort, the field of 20, the distance, the scrutiny, the television coverage. That you could go on and on and on. The noise from the crowd when you're turning for home, you can say whatever you want. There is nothing like this race. So to officiate it like it's, the third race on Wednesday at Podunk Downs, can you do that? Yes. Should you do that? I don't think so. I think it was Tom Amos said, he referenced basketball. He said, they're letting the guys play. That's what they've traditionally done in the Derby. They've let guys play. Now, whether you agree that that's the way to do things or whether you are in the camp that says, call it by the book. You know, if you're an official, you see a foul, you have to call it. And a foul on Wednesday is the same as a foul in the Kentucky Derby. It depends which camp you reside in. I reside, as a former athlete, I reside in the let the guys play. Let them, if a foul, if my theory is this. If someone commits a foul to gain an advantage, I'm going to call it. But if it's a foul that's in the course of play, no one gains an advantage, I'm going to let it go. And that's the way I view it and the way I would have expect. That's the way the Kentucky Derby's always been called. That's the way the first turn is called. That's the way, you know, there were other horses who got stopped in the race for a variety of reasons. There's bumping all over. If you read the chart of the race, every horse was bumped. Now, not as severely, but still. 20-horse field, it's going to happen. Three-year-old, it's going to happen. So it depends which camp you end up in, and I think that's how you come down. What is the right? There is no right. That's why I've seen some online polling. Was the call right or wrong? They're all very close. They're all 60-40, 50-50, you know, they're very close. And I think that's because it all comes down to how do you handle a foul in the biggest race, one of the biggest races in the world. How do you judge a foul? And that's basically the way I see it. Because there's no question, I don't think, anyone that watches races on a regular basis could say, There wasn't a foul. There was a foul. It affected several horses. Did it change the outcome? Not in my opinion and not in the opinion of many people, or many intelligent people, several of whom have been on your show already. So where's the issue? Well, the issue is how you react, how you interpret the rule. I saw a great quote from Todd Pletcher where he said, you know, it was, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was a very difficult, you know, he was proud of the stewards and proud of racing, that in a very difficult situation, they made the call that was necessary to make in a tense, you know, pressure-packed situation. They did what, you know, what was right. Certainly, you can view it that way. I can't argue with that. He's correct. It was a foul. The stewards were in a terrible spot. They made the call that they, you know, they chose to call it by the book. Great. If I was in that stand, I would have been the sending vote because I didn't, you know, I'd rather let the guys go. Now, then you get into the whole thing about that shot of War of Will's legs going between Maximum Security's legs. And it's frightening. Dangerous? Yes. But I will say that's a similarity to the other days of the week. It's always dangerous out there. Horses clip heels, I'm going to say, nearly every race. They don't put their leg through another horse's legs every day, but they clip heels. They get in tight. Guys scream. There's bumping. There's squeezing. There's, you know, bouncing around. Yeah, this is a very dangerous, dangerous sport. Takes a lot of courage to do what these riders do and what these horses do. And, you know, also we have to give them so much credit. I always say they're the world's greatest athletes, you know, and I believe that. Their agility is incredible. For their size, that they can move as fast as they can on legs no bigger than yours or mine, and have the agility when going that fast to move, you know, 11, 1,200 pounds and to be bumped and knocked off striding and to just continue to move forward. I mean, it is amazing. And I, you know, I'm sorry that their greatness has to come out in a moment where it was a controversial moment in the game, and not a moment of glory where you could say, you know, look what they do. Look what these animals are capable of. But that's where it is. And certainly the enhanced coverage, the enhanced video coverage because it was on TV, you know, gives us better, more insightful pictures into what happened, more insightful video. And you know, so if this was the third race on a Wednesday at Podunk Downs, we wouldn't have all these angles and all these views, and you know. But that's it. That's kind of how I see it.
I tend to agree. And so far, I think we're 3-1. Amos on the DQ. You 4-1. You, me, Grenig, and Beyer. All right, we're going to keep tabs. And add it up. Meanwhile, Johnny, aside from that, and that's what's so maddening about this, because I mean, there's actually it's a double-edged sword, because the negative is it's taking away from just in the stakes front alone, 13 stakes over the 2 days,
yeah,
and some unbelievable efforts and some brilliant training work. Steve Asmussen with 3 grade 1s and just phenomenal. How about, you know, McKenzie and Mattioli, World of Trouble, who I immediately thought of Andy Serling, because Andy pointed out after Breeders' Cup that obviously Stormy Liberal and World of Trouble, people were like, oh, how can they run those kinds of figures, because they like the soft turf. They like turf with cut in it, and World of Trouble clearly showed that if there's some give to the ground, he just excels over it. Concrete Rose. We're going to talk to Rusty Arnold in a little bit, and Rusty authors the upset of Newspaper of Record. I mean, the most shocking thing beyond the DQ was Newspaper of Record getting beat. That would be what we'd be talking about as a sidebar to the weekend, and so on. I mean, there was some terrific racing, and there were some interesting wagering returns too. I want you to weigh in on that.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. I was afraid that the rain was going to, you know, put a damper on the whole weekend, but it really. You know, we all know and we all said that track dries out very quickly, and it did, and the turf racing was good. That course stayed firm, as Donna Barton pointed out to us on the broadcast several times. Everything you just talked about was amazing. And I think that Newspaper of Record getting beat, I was as shocked as the rest of the world. But for two reasons. One, because I think she's incredibly talented, and I thought she was an incredible animal that was ready to do all sorts of, earth-shattering things in her career. And second, she's trained by Chad Brown. He when he's supposed to win, especially in a turf race with a filly, he usually gets the job done, whether it's a filly or male, he gets the job done. So that was incredibly shocking, and I hope that it was just a matter of maybe she tricked him. Sometimes the good ones would do that to trainers.
That's what he
because
said.
Trainers,
yeah.
Oh, did he say that? Okay,
he did. He blamed himself. Yeah, he said this is on me. He said I thought she was fit enough, and he thinks he underestimated, you know, who was going to go up against her. And frankly, when we talked to Rusty, when I went up to congratulate him afterward, he said she was training like she was going to run like that. Rusty is, you know, doted on this filly from early last summer. I mean, he thought she was a special talent. So it was X marks the spot here.
Yeah, and what happens with really good horses and trainers is that they're so good that they do things so easily that they fool trainers into thinking them. Because obviously, you know, when you're training a Philly like newspaper record, you're bringing her back for her first start. You do not make her ultimate, you know, you don't tighten the screws, to paraphrase. You have her ready enough to win the race, but not, you know, you don't want to get her too ready because you got a whole season in front of her. So I think when the good ones, they trick you. You think they're further along than they are. And I think, well, I didn't hear him say that, but I'm glad that that's what it was, because that's what it seemed to me. And not to take anything away from Rusty Philly, certainly not. You still have to run to beat her, and Rusty Philly certainly did fire a great shot. But an explanation. Look, as a horse player, you're always looking for some kind of explanation. I've got an explanation for the Kentucky Derby that was handed to me, kind of beat me over the head. And you alluded to it earlier this morning when they opened the surface up.
Yeah.
Just before the Derby, I was sitting there and I was like, I don't know. I mean, I know you guys know exactly what you're doing, but it's raining, and it continued to rain. They got tricked. They took a shot. They thought it would not be raining, and it kept raining. And when that track got wet, it was more rain than it could, you know, comfortably handle. It got very deep. And the first, you know, the first inkling I got of it was Todd Pletcher say, you know, on the walk over on television, he was interviewed and he made a point of saying, this racetrack is different now. It's deep.
Yep.
It's, you know,
yep.
It's laboring, you know. To paraphrase, again, it's not exactly what he said, but, and at that point, right then, I'm scurrying through the past performances to see, you know, who this is going to benefit, who, you know, who's going to move up,
yep.
Who's going to, you know, so, you know, you're at the line of scrimmage calling an audible, and even though you have plenty of time, really, but it apparently wasn't enough time. And the other thing is, You asked me last Monday about, we discussed the 2-day pick six, and we talked about the weather forecast. And the running joke all week, you know, you've encouraged it, is, you know, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes and it'll change. You know, that's the way it kind of is in Louisville in May. And we get this every year, it seems like. So, you know, it changed. And the track condition changed. So if you had put in a pick six, a 2-day pick six, I didn't play it. My answer to you was, I don't know what the track's going to be like.
Yeah.
You know, the second day. Well, apparently, I didn't know what it was going to be like from when I put in my pick five, which was the same day. Because while I had a brief moment of joy because it appeared I'd hit the pick five with maximum security, which was only paying $5,400, and, you know, money is not everything, Steve. I am coldly reminded of that now. That would have been enjoyable, though. I did not, when the race is live, I did not see the incident. And I think somebody else admitted that this morning. I think Dave Greenig or someone admitted it this morning. I did not see the incident. And to tell you the truth, I don't think the stewards saw it either. I think that they were just watching. And because it wasn't like, you know, when you go back and you look at it, you say, well, obviously, there it is. Look at it. Yeah, okay, now I see it. But I didn't see it live. Maybe it was because of the video. The pan shot wasn't as bad as some of the other shots. Once you got into the other shots, it was clear that was a foul. But now, also, in my mind, I'm thinking, Kentucky Derby, you don't take it down for that. You know, it wasn't that bad. Well, as you kind of watch replay after replay, I thought to myself, yeah, that's probably going to come down. So that on the gambling front, that was my major disappointment of the day. My major joy of the day was Mr. Money.
Me too.
Mr. Money Yeah.
And Hot Creek Hustle.
And Hot Creek Hustle, but, yeah, yeah. You know, my buddy Will comes over and sits down with me, and we play the races together. And, of course, he was solidly behind Hot Creek Hustle, and I was solidly behind Mr. Money. And did we compare notes for the exact? No. Why would we? For that bombing exacta, why would we compare notes? What is that, 7-1 over 13-1? Who needs that? But I made a nice win bet on Mr. Money because he was kind of, you know, as the afternoon went on, he became my play of the day. I kind of liked him a lot. So that was a nice score. I thought he was, and that was a Thoroughgraph thing because I think if you look at the race, if you just look at the PPs, he's a little bit hard to come up with. But he was a Thoroughbred kind of play for me. You know, you touched on the brother DQ. One brother gets DQ'd in the Oaks, and one gets DQ'd in the Derby. Obviously, John, not from the win, but his filly gets DQ'd in the Oaks, and Jason gets DQ'd from the win in the Derby. That's got to be a first. It's nice to hear social media had a positive effect on someone, finally. Tom Amos describing how social media forced him to, you know, film or videotape his filly, which then led him to starting her in the Oaks and winning the Oaks. Moving forward, we've got the Preakness Wager Guide on Friday. Talk about your quick turnaround. And this is ridiculous. The blood hasn't dried on my shoes yet from losing that to pick five on Saturday, and I'm working on the Preakness guide.
I know, and I'm going to have to do the same. You know, we're still going to be a little bit fluid on the field too, Johnny, because I think there's going to be, I won't say more movement than usual, but because there always is plenty of movement. But to give everybody a snapshot, and then Johnny, I got to get to Brett Calhoun and Rusty, and then Mig and Tony are going to join us. But to give everybody a quick snapshot, right now you're looking at Country House, War of Will, Code of Honor out of Derby. And I can tell you from a conversation with Mike Trombetta that what he's seeing right now, he would be inclined to run win. He has not spoken to Mrs. Weber yet. He wants to give it a couple more days and see also what's happening to that field. But I think there's more than a good chance that win participates in this, and he was one of the horses that just was kind of climbing, and he only got beat 8 lengths, and actually, you know, considering his start, he did not run badly. Bodhi Express considering, Soweno considering, Bourbon War now you can make a probable. Henning saying that the way the field is shaping, that instead of the Peter Pan and Belmont, that he's inclined to run Bourbon War. Then you've got the horses that are coming out of other performances and that have been waiting in the wings. Mr. Money out of the Pat Day Mile, another twist of fate, who regrouped and headed this direction. Owendale, who, of course, came out of the Lexington performance. Always Mining, who is a very dangerous commodity and is going to get a lot of attention coming out of the Tessio and a series of wins, and Signalman for McPeak. So we're looking at 10, 11, 12 horses easily for Preakness, and I won't be surprised if a couple more faces make themselves apparent here in coming days.
Well, we had a unique Kentucky Derby, 4-1 favorite, and the favorite did not win. Improbable actually was the starting favorite, which I didn't even kind of notice, you know, until after the race. We had a unique Derby. We're going to have a very unique Preakness this year. To have a big field like that with several contenders. I mean, this is really going to be. You talk about the Derby was wide open. This one's really wide open. So, lots of work to do to kind of dig this one out.
Well, Johnny, we'll have the wagering guide out on Friday. And speaking of wagering guide, big acknowledgement, Country House did show up in one selection grid, and that was Millie Ball had him in there. Good for her. I mentioned him just as a, you know, value potential because he just felt like a horse that was progressing nicely, and he absolutely relished the going and got a great ride from Pratt. And but Millie had him in her selections.
I got a kick out of Gary West's comment after the race that this is a tough game. Even when you win, you lose, or something similar to that. And I said, well, we must not play exactas.
That's a good line. I love it.
What reminded me of that is Millie Ball, because she had Country House in all of her exotics. Almost all of them. And had him ranked fourth and had him in the two hole in her exotics. This is a tough game. Tough game. But it's the greatest. I mean, incredible enjoyment this weekend. A little bit of a bad taste, a little bit of a sour taste. I must admit, it just doesn't feel the same. And the DQ certainly is the reason for that. And I feel bad for Maximum Security. I feel bad for Jason Service, and I feel bad for Gary and Mary West. They won the Kentucky Derby. I wouldn't say fair and square, but they won the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, Johnny. This is tough, and the most difficult to me is part of it is that you have to explain this to people that just don't understand that it's part of what happens. I mean, it's just part of it's an element.
My analogy of when I was describing this to the guys at the reunion, one guy said to me, "Yeah, but they don't bet on the NFL." I said, "Yes, they do."
That's a great line.
You can't use that one anymore.
You couldn't use it previously. Who's kidding who?
Come on. You couldn't, but with a wink, you could. Now you can't.
Yeah, I guess. Oh my God, pretty funny actually. Well, yeah. Johnny, I appreciate it. I appreciate the analysis. I mean, you're the perfect example. I mean, somebody that understands the jock side of it, given your long association as an agent and as a serious gambler. And I said that myself to somebody on Twitter that it's we deal with this every day, and what do they say? Sometimes you to paraphrase something from Bull Durham, right? Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes you get rained out, or sometimes you're called on account of darkness. You deal with it.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, does it upset you? Do you want to quit? Do you want to never? Yes, for about. I think it lasted till Sunday morning. Then I was back at it.
Yeah, we were driving, and I was chewing on it all. We got to mid Ohio about 2 a.m. and I was rolling it over.
Because it wasn't something. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, sorry.
Because it wasn't something wrong.
Right.
It wasn't something. They didn't do anything. Stewart didn't do anything in their decision. That other stuff about talking to people and showing.
Yeah, that's a separate topic. Yeah.
It's a separate topic. But they didn't make a bad decision, I don't think. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't have done the same, but it's not a bad decision. So it wasn't like something was rotten in Denmark. It wasn't that case.
No. Johnny, we will talk next week, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Baltimore. And thanks as always.
Stevie, a pleasure, and don't unpack your bags.
Exactly. Well, I gotta do some laundry at the very least, right?
Yeah.
XB. Well, no. Yeah, all right, Tina. All right, I admit she will be doing much of it. Good point. XB Johnny D, everybody. We're going to stay right here because Rusty Arnold is standing by, and I know he's got to be somewhere at the bottom of the hour. So we want to get Rusty in to congratulate him and the Ashbrook team and partners. A wonderful scene with Mr. Bromigan on hand and the terrific effort. Concrete Rose, stunning newspaper of record in the Edgewood. Rusty, not only this win, but what a week you had. Every horse of yours came to run. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. We had a very, very good week. Thank you.
We'll start with the filly. When I went to congratulate you there on the apron or in the chute, you said she trained like she was going to run like that, and you've had confidence in her from day one.
She's been a good filly since she walked into our barn. She showed it in her first two starts. Had a setback on Breeders' Cup Day. Not that we were going to beat Chad's filly on that day, but there were two or three things happened that day. We had torrential rain. She drew the one hole, and she had run back in 3 weeks, and that's tough on a two-year-old filly. It was just a tough week, and she just ran flat, and we put her away and spent the winter getting her right, and it was the opposite going into this race. After she came out of the Tampa race, everything went right. Her breezes were on the day we wanted them. They went the right way. Everything just went terrific, and we thought we were taking a very good horse over there. Didn't know how we'd stack up against Chad's filly, newspaper record, but we felt like we at least had our horse at her best, and we would find out how we stacked up.
Well, and you stacked up well, and what was notable, I thought, was how dominant she ended up winning this, and Julian Leperoux obviously had great confidence in what he had in her because he just was kind of biding his time. And when they straightened for home, it seemed like, you know, there was a lot to do. And you could see, I'd say, before the eighth pole, you could see she's going to corral newspaper a record here.
Yeah, but she had that's more her running style. I think she wants to do that. That's the way she did it in her first couple of starts. You know, everything went well. She, I'm going to have to tell you, it's a 3/8 pole. I told my wife, I said, this filly's going to run up and be second to this filly, which is going to be a very good race, because I had seen Irad peek under his shoulder a couple of times. And I said, you know, I think he's sitting on a lot of horse. And all at once, you know, we hit the 3/16 pole, and we're not that far back. And it even surprised me a little bit.
Well, she goes on up to and right on by and wins by, you know, an increasing margin. What went on a little bit? Bring us back to the winter. And, you know, November was the Breeders' Cup. And like you said, you had to regroup out of that. And you put her right into the Florida Oaks. I mean, were you basically planning, you know, the two race campaign here early in the year, the Oaks and Tampa, and then, you know, to come straight to the Edgewood?
It was actually the way, it's one of those plans that worked out. A lot of them don't. And we got her to Florida. We gave her the month off. We turned her in a round pen and just let her kind of regroup and put a little weight on. It was very uneventful. She started back training. We picked the Tampa Oaks out. And we couldn't make the early race at Gulfstream. We could have run her at Gulfstream. We just couldn't get her ready in time with the time off we'd given her. So the Tampa race was a better fit for us, and it went well. And not perfect. It was the first time she'd ever shipped in her life and ran on the same day. And she misbehaved a little bit in the paddock, which was very out of character for her. She's usually completely composed, but once she got on the racetrack, she did everything right, and she came to Keeneland, and the race at Keeneland was too quick. We knew we weren't going to make it, so we set her down for this race, and everything went right. We had got her schooled a few times. She was perfect in the paddock, and everything that went wrong just came right, and it was one of those days where it all worked out.
Well, she now is perfect, 4 for 4. The only thing the only blemish on the record is that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf. Question that is worth asking, yielding that day, and hard to know, you know, they called it firm on Friday, which, boy, that seemed like a bit of a boast. No, I mean, how could that turf have been firm on Friday?
I tell you, Steve, it wasn't bad. I don't know. It might have been a different degree of firm, but if you watch the kickback, it wasn't bad. They weren't churning it up very bad, and they were getting across it. So, maybe it was on the soft side of firm, but it wasn't too bad. The one thing good about this turf course at Churchill this week is it hasn't been run on. Your first day running on it was what, Tuesday, and it hadn't been cut up where a lot of water was going off the top of it and going right off. So it was pretty amazing that the horses that ran across it, the times were decent. They weren't your boggy times where you want a mile and 140 and change. It was a pretty good turf course.
You know, and I'm just looking down, it makes me realize she has now won races on four different lawns.
Yeah, she takes her game with her. You know, she's now won at Keeneland, Saratoga, Tampa, and here. So you don't have to worry about where you take her, I don't think.
How about that? And that's unusual. I mean, that's just talent, because there's plenty that, you know, there's plenty that show up at Keeneland with the sand base and don't care for it. So, you know, that this
yeah,
is
it's, yeah. Yeah, I think she's a special horse, and I think she beat a special horse. I have nothing. I know how good Chad's filly is, and I know how good he brings them over there. And when you're fortunate enough to beat one of them, you feel really good about it, because you know you beat a really good horse that was well prepared, and so it makes your horse even look better.
You know, got to ask about the purchase too. $61,000 at Timonium last year as a 2-year-old in training.
Yeah, you're going to have to ask somebody else. I was not involved in that at all.
Okay.
It was Bo Bromagen and David Engordo picked her out and sent her to me. And I knew she was coming when they called me and told me that they bought her.
You know, got to mention the scene in the winner's circle. To have Mr. Bromagen on hand, really, really quite nice. I think it was a pretty special afternoon for the family.
Yeah, it was special for them, and very special for me. In our business, it's tough to work for somebody around 30 years, and I'm probably wrong on that. It might be a little bit longer. I mean, I had Tricky Creek for him way back. I don't even want to know the years. I know it was in the early 90s. Had a filly called Scorn Last before that. It was a great stakes winner, and it just doesn't happen in our business. And when I went to work for him, the kids weren't around, and now I'm working for the kids, and that's a huge accomplishment. And for them to stick with me, and it's really, really was nice, and he had a smile on his face that was unbelievable.
Very much so, and so did Mr. Humphrey. How about awestruck in that allowance? I don't want to let that go, because that could have been, frankly, that could have had a name on it, or a trophy handed out. That was a serious group, and that was a good race by her.
She ran very well. She loves Churchill Downs. She runs well there. She she needed a race at Keeneland. I might have not had her ready. I thought I did, but didn't get beat far and had an inside trip. She came out of it very well. We wheeled her right back, and everything went right. I told everybody when I got the condition book from Churchill Downs and the purses were so good Derby week, I said, it's really nice to look at them, but it looks like you better be ready when you go over there, because everybody's coming for them, and that's how it was. I mean, every race you saw over there that week had horses could run at them. They were extremely tough, the allowance races.
Well, and go back to, I think it would be have to be, was it Wednesday or Thursday? I can't remember. The listed stake, too, in Morticia, just got necked in Richard Baltus's filly beat him.
Yeah, tough loss. Just got outrun. We had a really good trip, made the lead, and I don't know Richard, but he did a good job because his filly did not run good at Keeneland. Could have been a turf course, and he turned the tables, and she came running. I mean, and I don't think my filly quit running. She just got caught and got beat, but the effort was there. I mean, I think that makes 20 times out of 22 or something. She's been on the board. It's incredible. So she just shows up every time you take her over there.
Well, and also, I don't want the win by Baracho to go unnoticed either. That looks like that's going to be a situation worth following. Talk about that one.
Baracho's just an improving horse. He got his maiden broke at 2, you know, struggled to do it, but did it at Churchill Downs and came back and ran a decent AO than at Churchill. And we ran him along, and we tried him along, I think, 2 to 3 times. I don't have the form in front of me. We tried him 2 turns, and I'm going to give Chris Landeris a lot of the credit there. He got off of him in Florida, and he said, Rusty, this horse is doing really well. He doesn't want to go 2 turns. He said, I had a horse right into the second turn. He just flattened out. So we backed him up and sprinted him. He was 40-1, and he made a really, really good run to be second. Caught a very, very tough group of horses at Keeneland, made a very good run to be third, and we were really glad to take him over there. We kind of laughed when the the program came out and the odds had him 20-1. I said, I don't think it's a 20-1 shot here, and then the bettors made him 5-1, and that a little bit more where we thought he would be.
Well, you know, the one thing that didn't go right with him, obviously, he didn't develop fast enough for you to win a third straight Pat Day Mile.
No, we didn't get there. We would have liked to got him to the Pat Day Mile, but we didn't get there. And I think had we entered him, we wouldn't have got in either.
Yeah, they had the big field. That's right. And you did have Funny Duck, unfortunately, didn't make the he had to scratch, but you did have a Wild Shot in. It was kind of cool that, you know, you were in position to have the last 2 Pat Day Mile winners both run over the weekend. 89 buyer for Baracho coming out of here, the Uncle Mo. And what do you look to? Do you take him to New York maybe for the Woody?
I think if he did great, we may look at that. I know Brett's horse, he ran really, really well in the Pat Day Mile. He was also an A other than. So it's a wide open group, and I don't think there's many one-turn races around. And if he returns good and everything goes good and he trains well, that's probably where we'll take him.
Well, and we're going to talk to Brett here momentarily, and he's going to the Preakness with Mr. Money, so you won't have to deal with him.
Well, I didn't know that, but that's great information to have. Now it might make that decision even easier.
Well, you got to listen to the show more often, Rusty.
I do listen to the show, but
I know you do.
This is new information. This is new information.
I love it. Before we go, because we're surveying everybody, you were putting you in the steward stand. Talk about the Derby. What were your impressions, and what would you have done if you had a vote?
Oh, that's a tough one. I can't be politically correct, obviously. I hate to see the horse come down. I hated to see him come down. I watched the pan before I left the track. I said, I don't know. I don't know why they take this horse down. It just doesn't look that bad to me. Since I've seen a lot of the head-ons, I can see that horse came down. He came very, very close to causing a wreck that would have been really, really bad. So I have no problems that they did take him down after watching it. I know it was a tough call. I don't think any. I'm glad I wasn't the one that had to make it.
There you go. All right, we're. I don't know. By the time we're done, I hope I have an odd number of guests so that we can have a definitive answer here, like a Supreme Court.
Is it a close vote?
It is a close vote. Let's see. Me, Andy Beyer, Dave Groening, and Johnny D say leave him up, and you and Amos say take him down.
Yeah, I would have preferred to be on to leave him up. You know, the toughest thing about the takedown is a horse that was not involved, just got lucky to be in the right place at the right time and gets put up. You would almost feel better if you know, where a wheel would have got up for second, and then you put him up. And you hate to see a horse that didn't get bumped. Only person that thought he got bothered was his rider, and I don't know where he dreamt that up at. But that horse just got lucky. He got in the right place at the right time, and I almost feel bad for them. I mean, because Everybody knows that he didn't win. And you're going to be asked your whole life, I think there isn't a trainer in the world that wouldn't want to say, I won the Kentucky Derby. And now when you get asked that, well, I did, but I didn't. And that's tough on both sides. There wasn't a winner on that decision. It was tough.
Well put. I had that same kind of feeling, you know, that nobody wins out of this. I do want to mention Tony Black and Rich Migliori are going to discuss it from a rider perspective here in a little bit after we're joined by Brett. And Rusty, Tony let me know that, he's all excited. We talked to him 2 weeks ago today when My Juliet was tabbed for the Hall of Fame. And he tells me that you worked for Gene Euster at around that that time.
I did. I was at Keystone for one winter with him. It's a long story if you got a second, but I called Gene's niece the other day and told her that My Juliet was put in the Hall of Fame. They were neighbors. Gene's brother was a neighbor of us when I grew up in Lexington. His name was Stuart Euster. I think he was an accountant. He didn't have any connection to the horse business other than Gene. And I graduated with his daughter, and they introduced me to Gene. And I went to work for him for a winter at Keystone, and they are completely unconnected from the horse business. They had no idea, and I called them up, and I said, this is some huge honor, and I hope that they can make it to Saratoga. And I was going to call the Hall of Fame people and tell them that he had family still alive to see if they knew that. And I told her to call them up, so I hope they make that connection, and I hope they show up.
Well, Tony and Tony Black is going to be on hand. In fact, I should send you the picture of Tony in the silks, which is he put him on the other day.
I can't wait to see it. They still fit. That's a compliment anyway. I don't think I could be wearing silks from 30 years ago.
He not only that. I mean, if they came up with My Juliet 2, he'd go out and ride right now.
He could get on her.
Oh, my God, yeah. He's still – Rusty, Tony's exercising in the morning. He's getting on horses still.
He's the East Coast Perry Utes.
Exactly right. I think Perry's only got maybe a year or two on Tony. Perry's how old? 68? 60.
I'd say no. I don't think he's that old. I think he's more me, or he's 63 or 4. I think.
All right. Well, then Tony's older. Tony's got him. We're going to find out later. I'm going to ask Tony. But that was great. I didn't realize you worked for Euster. That's very cool. Well,
he was very, very good to me when I came up on the racetrack. Very good to me.
Well, and Rusty Arnold, very good to his clients, and boy, what a terrific week of performances, particularly obviously Concrete Rose winning the Edgewood, and we'll be seeing her in the summer series. Lots of good opportunities for 3-year-old fillies long on the grass. Rusty, well done. Talk soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Always fun. Rusty Arnold, everybody. We're staying right here, and the conversations continue. And certainly for Brett Calhoun and Chester Thomas, a very special Derby day, even though it didn't go perfect, obviously, for By My Standards, who had a troubled beginning, kind of put him in a defensive position early. But before that, before the Derby rolled around, a tremendous performance from Mr. Money to win the Pat Day Mile by half a mile, 5-6 lengths over Vicky Foley's Hog Creek Hustle. And Brett Calhoun joins us. Brett, congratulations.
Thanks a lot. Good morning.
Good morning. And I, love when this happens. You know, the Derby is going to be a tough win for everybody, all the excitement when you have a horse on the undercard and earlier in a stake, you get that win. You know you're going home with something good. And talk about what went into Mr. Money's Pat Day Mile win, and for the Thomases, a joyous scene in that winner's circle.
Well, it definitely eases a little bit of pressure early in the day. But this horse had trained very, very well. Obviously, he earlier on in the winter, he was our, quote, derby horse, and we kind of got off track a little while. He got a little bit of a sickness and a couple of things didn't go right. So he's always been a horse that we thought a lot of. He got to Churchill Downs and trained very, very well. We had a lot of confidence going into the race. Obviously, it's always a very tough race, but he couldn't have been doing any better, and he ran like that.
He swamped this field, and when Saez, who almost, I mean, basically couldn't hold him any longer, right? I mean, he just wanted to go. He was just a keg of dynamite.
Yes, he looked like he was about to run over the top of him, and I was kind of glad he was covered up for a while so he didn't get loose too early. But once he found a little seam, there was no more waiting. That horse just took him there.
Well, and did it obviously in racehorse time, career best fig for him, and the cutback to 7/8, which is such a potent angle in this race, and it has been, you know, for a long while. And of course, Vicky Foley's Hot Greek Hustle, same thing, cutting back, and works for him. Dreammaker for Cassie and Mr. Oxley. He was cutting back out of the bluegrass, so all the cutbacks, 1, 2, 3 in here, and now you are basically looking like you can't resist a chance to stretch back out to 1 3/16 for the Preakness. How far into that decision are you?
We're not too far in. Obviously, there's been some discussion. Obviously, there's 1.5 million reasons to think about it. So definitely some temptation there. You know, we hadn't really got a quite of a line on how far this horse wants to run. I thought in the Pat Day Mile, he could have gone around there again. So, I mean, he looked pretty strong that day. So it gives you a little encouragement. You think he can handle the distance. You know, obviously you mentioned coming off his best speed figures. That's always in the back of your mind too, coming back in 2 weeks. So there's a lot of things to weigh and think about.
For his development, and I know when we were at Fairgrounds for the Risen Star, and at that time, you know, there had been the scenario where you were aiming for the LeCompte, and you had that setback, as mentioned, and so you waited for his 3-year-old debut. So by all rights, in your plan for the classic season, you basically were one race behind. So in a lot of ways, this almost feels like, you know, a perfect tightener, almost a workout style that comes with a nice paycheck and with, you know, grade 3 black type. And so now, you know, he should be where you'd want him for a chance at a classic.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, we got off track. We had a plan this winter. Went perfectly, freshened him a little bit after the Breeders' Cup. Had him very, very ready for the LeCompte. He got sick before that. He got over it fairly quickly. I'm sure it still took a little bit of a toll on him, but he got over it pretty quickly. Pointed towards the next spot, there was a star. Everything went really, really good. 2 days out, he was training phenomenally. Like 1 day out, I think he got cast in the stall that night. He had a little scrape on his hip. Wasn't much to it. He was sound, but he sure didn't train quite the same the day before the race, and really didn't run that well. So it seemed like we just kept having small, minor setbacks all winter. And so he probably definitely needed the race in the Louisiana Derby. He didn't get a great trip. It wasn't a terrible trip, but he didn't get a great trip and ran a respectable fifth. And he really moved forward off of that, trained phenomenally at Churchill, and showed up in the Pat Day Mile. Like you've been training. So, yeah, he's surely, we're hoping that he's on the improve and ready for a big spring, summer, and fall.
Well, and one thing that just caught my eye, and I'm sure I'll see it from, if I haven't already, from Jenny Reese, but notable that both Concrete Rose and now this conversation about Mr. Money both through Ellis Park last year as two-year-olds.
Yes, for sure. It's the purse structure over there has changed for the positive for us with the help of Kentucky Downs. It's allowed us to run a lot of these better two-year-olds at Ellis in the summer instead of having to go ship to other places. So I think you're going to see more and more better two-year-olds show up at Ellis Park.
I said Concrete Rose. I meant Serengeti Empress. You've probably already heard from a lot of players, Brett, that Mr. Money and in a lot of cases Hot Creek Hustle saved a lot of people's day, me included. So, thank you from all of us.
Yeah, I gave that horse out. I gave Mr. Money out on the radio show with Darren Rogers and Kevin on their ESPN show.
Good job.
They asked me for a horse. So I got lucky and gave him that. So might have cost some of my friends a little bit of money that knew some odds, but I was happy for everybody to get paid.
Well, we're going to wait for a Preakness decision here in coming days, and let's stick with Mr. Thomas and with your performers on Saturday. By my standards, one of the horses that had a difficult start and out of the Derby, talk about what you saw as the gates opened. And also, Brett, what you saw when the Harrows came around, which is a topic that's going to get visited here, I think, in the aftermath.
Yeah, I guess I'll just start there. Disappointed to see the track not being sealed. I'm not sure what the reason was behind that. Churchill Downs track is very, very good track when it's sealed. It does a very good job of shedding the water. So I'm not really sure what the reason was behind that. I think everybody in the country knew the rain was coming. And when we walked over, it was a bit of a bog for sure. So I'm sure that's going to have some discussion from here forward. I hope it gets looked into. I hope we get some answers, the reason behind that. But that being said, I think the racetrack was safe. I think that obviously when it gets to a situation like that, it becomes a little speed bias, speed favoring, and that's kind of what happened to us. We got run over for a jump or two and shuffled back and pretty much lost all chance at that point. We were not a speed horse to begin with, but we were hoping to get a better position than we got. Obviously, we would have gotten a decent position. I think we'd have gotten away clean and give us a lot better chance. But considering speed bias, racing surface, and us getting run over and squeezed back, it was pretty much all over for us.
And he still got around. He still tried. And, the frustration here, I mean, it's easy to say, what'd you end up, 12th? 12th. When you have this horse come out of the Louisiana Derby win, and turn in those four workouts. I mean, the fact is, no horse was more impressive preparing for this race, and then to have, a completely different racetrack, Brett, when it's post time, is, it's frustrating because anybody that watched him prepare, you have to enjoy that part of it, that he became the steam horse with every passing week.
He had an incredible 5 weeks at Churchill Downs preparing for the Derby. Gave us a lot of confidence going in. And like you said, when the rain hit, it pretty much maybe neutralized our somewhat advantage the way he'd been handling that main track. That's the way it goes. It's horse racing, and it was amazing. The day after Sunday here in Louisville was an absolutely beautiful day.
Of course.
It could have just waited one more day for us, but seems like we get that a lot this time of year. And that's horse racing, as they say.
Well, gotta ask for two things. I mean, a summary of your first Derby experience, and if there's anything that you would do, you know, you would do differently. And then, of course, I need you to weigh in, like everybody else, on the aftermath, the incident. Don't know how many opportunities you've had to watch the replays, and chances are you were, you know, had your eyes on, you know, on your silks, on the blue and white silks, but. Your thoughts about the DQ and what transpired and you know, your overall first Derby run.
Well, the overall Derby experience was fantastic. You know, it was, I can say it's a bit tiring. There's a lot that goes along into it. You know, you're trying to get family and friends accommodated, and that's a couple of weeks of that, and a lot of events and a lot of things to do, and try to help everybody get this thing covered up to the best, and get our product out there. So yeah, I can say I'm a little tired from the whole process, but it was a very enjoyable experience. Loved it. As far as the race goes itself, you know, with a 20 horse field, there's always going to be some traffic issues, and that's part of it. The luck or the unlucky of it sometimes. You know, like you said, I was kind of zoned in on my horse. I've gotten to see a few clips of it. You know, at the end of the day, the horse looked like he impeded some other horses and probably should have come down. You know, I think if it had been any other race or any other card, he would have definitely come down. I think you probably can't treat the Derby as a different race. You know, if he impeded those other horses, he's got to come down. With that being said, the things that are a little difficult for me right now to understand is why the inquiry sign didn't come up immediately. And second off, I've heard some quotes from Mr. West that the stewards were unwilling to meet with him to let him look at what they saw, look at their footage. And I think that's a mistake, because with the appeal process, you have to appeal within 48 hours, and they're not willing to meet with him until Thursday is what I was told. So therefore, he had to go ahead and file an appeal before he can even meet with them. And I really believe, had he been able to meet with them and seen their footage and their explanation, he probably would have been fine with it. But I think in his words were, he didn't feel like there was as much transparency as there should have been. And I think this probably could all have been resolved that evening. And so hopefully everybody will learn from this and move forward, but they probably should have met with him and probably should have had an inquiry sign up. But at the end of the day, I think the right call was made.
All right. So what's interesting about our survey here is we now have 3 takedown and 4 leave ups, and the horsemen, we got you, Amos, and Rusty have all said DQ. And me, Greg, Johnny, and Byer said, leave them up. It's kind of interesting. This looks like a horseman versus
that's
gambler.
That's frustrated gamblers there, Steve. That's frustrated gamblers, everybody.
Before we go, I got 2 things. That power jet down at Evangeline, that was a nice effort.
It was a great race. I was so happy to win with that horse that night for Mr. Reed. Great guy, great owner. Really deserving, so that was a lot of fun to win that race for him and take a little sting out of the Derby also.
Yeah, that came later on, and 23-20 on Power Jet with Chris Rozier, and we first got to know with Summer Bird, and you had 3 in here. I didn't realize it. Just looking at the chart, you had 3 in there. This was the sales Derby for the Louisiana Breds.
Correct.
Well, Joe Adcock, whose name you see on a lot of breeding lines, tell us about, just looking ahead, what do we got? We got some action at Lone Star. Yeah, we got Lone Star this week with you. You got the allowance. Oh, Cowgirls Like Us coming up.
Really looking forward to that race, actually, because a lot of those horses bred like that, the My Golden Song, seem to excel on a turf. She's never been on it. This is a race that I'm pointing for a stake race on June 1st with her, and this is kind of a race in between to prep, but it's also a race to find out what the turf will do for her, if it
helps her and moves her forward enough. I've always thought more of this filly than we've really gotten out of her, and she's done pretty well. She's won several stakes for us, but I thought she could move into the open ranks of some of the better three-year-old fillies, and she hadn't quite taken that step yet. So still looking to see if we can do a few things, maybe surface change like that turf race that might help her. So it's going to be an interesting race for us.
Well, and that's coming up on Friday, second race, Cowgirls Like Us for the Scarboroughs. And looks like Iram Diego aboard, Cowgirls Like Us. Brett, we'll see about Baltimore, and good chance we'll see you at Pimlico. Anything else you bring in there by any chance?
I don't think so. I think that's probably the only one we're looking at this point. We'll probably nominate a few more and take a look at some of the races, but that'd probably be the only one.
Well, a terrific afternoon, no matter what. Participation in the Derby for Chester Thomas, and they had a ball, and certainly winning the Pat Day Mile, and the chance to come back in 2 weeks with a different horse. There's a rare circumstance, an opportunity. Would you think about Belmont with By My Standards?
I don't know. You know, there's so many really good races the rest of the year for these three-year-olds. There's a lot of money at stake, a lot of really good races, and kind of just want to plan it out where we get the most done with them throughout the year.
Sure.
And so how that schedule works out, whether it be the Belmont or something else, I'm not quite sure yet. But I think if you have a healthy three-year-old this time of year that stays together well, healthy. I think there's a lot of opportunity, so just kind of want to be smart about our schedule.
Well, you got two of them. Pretty exciting to add another graded stake for Mr. Thomas, where Mr. Money taking the Pat Day Mile, and I would imagine Chester treasuring that picture, Brett, with Pat Day presenting a trophy. That has to be a nice, you know, a nice consolation prize from Saturday. The Derby was the big prize, but nothing wrong with what was accomplished earlier in the day. So well done.
Thanks a lot. No, we had a lot of fun. That was a great race for us, and it was a great experience for all of us, and we're really excited about it.
You should be. You got Mr. Money. You got By My Standards. Came back good, and lots to look forward to. Brett Calhoun, everybody, always fun to talk to, and really a nice scenario, all told, and may very well be in Baltimore with Mr. Money yet. We're going to stay right here and close out the morning. We got about 20-plus minutes, and standing by to add their voices and their experience, because between them, Rich Migliori and Tony Black, our go-to jockey colony, they've ridden in 64,063 races between the two of them. Unbelievable. And the pair have won 9,661 races in those 64,000 rides. And we say first, good morning, Rich Migliori.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And Tony Black, good morning.
Good morning, Rich and Steve. And you left out, I'm 67 years old.
so you are older than Perry Utes.
I'm older than Perry Utes, and I got on horses this morning.
Lucky
what's your
you.
Excuse, Meg? And I don't want to hear about that bad neck of yours.
I mucked stalls this morning.
Nice.
I was taking a horse the wrong way the other day, and the guy said, you still getting on horses? I said, yeah, I'm taking this one backwards, and everything but time. Backwards.
Unbelievable. Well, let's go back in time 48 hours, fellas. And this is something that, you know, people keep talking about. If this was a Wednesday and if it was an allowance race or a claiming race, et cetera, et cetera. But it is the Derby. There's 19 horses. There's a history of the way this race has been stewarded in the past. And I know people are arguing and saying things like, oh, it can't be judged differently because it's the Derby, except that the Derby has been historically judged differently by the stewards. So there is that point to throw at this. And, you know, Rich, you came around on Wheel Away with three horses vying for the lead. We'll start with you, and then Tony, you can respond, and you guys, I'll basically hand it off to you. But Rich, your view of what we saw Saturday.
Well, I think the best horse won. Did he duck out? Absolutely. You know, that's indisputable. He spotted something. You could see. I watched the ISO replay a bunch of times yesterday. His ears came up. He cocked his head to the left, jumped to his right lead. He ducked out two or three paths, and Luis Saez did the best he could to correct him. And it brings us to another quick point. I won't go completely off topic, but, you know, we have this outcry about riding crops or whips, and they shouldn't have them. If Luis Saez didn't have a whip to get that horse's attention again, where does he wind up? On the outside fence in the grandstand? So, you know, people that think that that is an answer to make things safer, I think right there is an absolute prime example of why a rider actually needs to carry one. That horse really lost his focus, disengaged, horses got to him, he re-engaged, took off again. And the way the Derby has been adjudicated over as many years as I can remember, it's basically they allow more to go, more rough riding, and I just don't see how anybody was served, other connections, the betting public, to take him down and move horses forward that were not getting any more of a check, was not going to have any bearing on the wagering. And the horse, you know, Flavian Pratt claimed foul. He wasn't affected at all. In essence, he got rewarded, and I can make a case he should be fined for a frivolous claim of foul, Tony.
Absolutely. On any other day, that would be a frivolous claim of foul. You weren't involved in the incident. The only reason he did claim foul was to draw attention to something that he thought might wind up to be his advantage. But it was a frivolous claim. It was just an attention getter that he wanted to get the attention of the stewards because they didn't put up an inquiry.
Yep. And isn't that the problem, too, though, that, like, if nobody had claimed foul, let's say,
Tyler Gaglione was the one that could have claimed foul. Did he claim foul?
No, he didn't. He and Cassie both felt that there was no need and there was no reason.
So, you know, I think the stewards took a deep breath when they didn't get a claim foul from him, and they didn't hang up the inquiry initially, because when you claim foul, it's pulling up. You go and you tell the outrider, put this race on hold. I want to claim foul. He didn't get that. Because isn't it a quick official down there if you don't do that?
Yes. Yep.
Right. So he didn't do that, and I bet you the stewards took a sigh of relief. Oh, there's no claim of foul. We saw what happened. We didn't put an inquiry up. We don't want to provoke anybody into claiming foul. We don't want to alert the public, and we won't have to decide something that is going to be decided and criticized as it is going, you know, if we have to take them down. But the safe course of action would have been, as Mig said, leave the horse up. Let cooler heads preside over this situation sometime in the future. If one of the other competitors says, oh, wait a minute, you know, we're going to put this purse on hold. All the spectators get paid. All the backers of Maximum Security get paid. But we're going to appeal this to the commission. And then if you appeal it to the commission, it'll be done in a way that it's not as stressful. It doesn't have to make the race official. It'll be an appeal. They'll decide with cooler heads or easier moments, decide whether this number should have come down. He was the best horse. The horses that were involved in this wouldn't have been placed any more forward. The stewards, if they did that, would have made the race official. They would have had to justify their discretionary decision. Well, we have to justify our decision. In this case, it's easier to justify the decision because, as the commission rule says, you know, you can't take another horse's room away or go in the path of another horse without being clear. That's a rule. That's a commission rule, and that is a commission interpretation of the rule. It's just an interpretation of the rule, and it doesn't take into the account that the stewards can make a discretionary judgment. It didn't affect the outcome of the race or any forward position of any horse. You know, it's easier to justify a rule than it is a mindset. And that's what discretion of the stewards is. It's a mindset. We didn't feel that it jeopardized anybody. And I just think it was a, you know, don't want to speak for them because I don't even know them. If they wanted to go back in this thing, if you could go back in time, I think they'd have made a different decision.
Well, Tony, Rich, let me just interject this. A lot of people are saying that, it took a lot of courage to take that horse down in that setting. I understand Tony's point. It actually probably would have taken more courage to leave him up.
Absolutely, because you have to prove the discretion of the steward.
Yeah, I think it probably would have taken courage. But listen, they were in a tough situation. I think things could have been handled better if they had put up the inquiry. Because it leads you to believe if Flavian Pratt doesn't claim foul, and the chart doesn't say John Court claimed foul, but I've told you he claimed foul and he finished 17th. If they don't claim foul, it's official. They wipe their hands of it. Nothing to see here. That's what it makes you feel like. And then after the fact, you come out, you read a prepared statement, and you don't take any questions. That didn't take courage. That you're supposed to do. That you have to be transparent. I know it's difficult. I know it's tough. I have finally had the opportunity to interview Tyler Gaffleone yesterday, and I asked him, why didn't you claim foul? And he was clear. He and Mark Cassie, just what you said, Steve, felt like it wasn't the right thing. It wasn't going to reward them or fix anything. And I thought, out of anybody, that kid has really handled himself like an older rider, like a kid that hasn't been around. He's kind of a throwback. I really am very impressed with him. I think he is a throwback to, I guess I'll say it, mine and your era a little more, Tony.
Well, you know what? We rode 64,000 races, but I can't recall a day that I claimed foul that I finished that far back just to jeopardize someone from winning a race because I was mad. Might have gone back to the jocks room and used some expletives and a few choice words. They didn't, you came over on me,
right.
We'd have conversations. But I didn't claim foul when I finished 15th, 16th. You don't finish 15th or 16th. But let's say you finished 7th or 8th, many 10, 12 horse field. Didn't claim foul when that occurred. I don't think you would have claimed foul when that occurred.
No.
But, that's kind of like an unwritten rule with jockeys, If you want to come back and bitch about it, do it after the race, but you don't bitch about it to the stewards and try to get a winner taken down. And chances are you weren't going to win the race anyway. An example of how they judge these races sometimes was Bayern in Santa Anita in a race, in a Breeders' Cup race. He left the gate. Yeah. I think he made a right turn leaving the gate, eliminated the speed in the race. I would have been easier to accept something like that if they took him down, if you go back and you look at that. It was a Breeders' Cup race, because you did change maybe the outcome of the race because you eliminated the speed leaving there, and some horses, when they get hooked or have other speed horses in a race, can change the whole complexion of that race, and it could change the outcome of that race. But they always use the excuse, left the gate, he made a left or a right, and it was first jump. Well, yeah, and how long did it take the jock to react to it? Instead of reacting to it in 2 strides, it took him 5 strides to react to it. Well, in this case, Luis Saez reacted immediately. His horse did exactly what you said he did, Richie. You have a great evaluation. He pricked his ears. He saw the crowd, and he stuck his toes in. And you made a very good point, which I wasn't even thinking about. There is room for riding crops in this business. And I hope we start. In Philly, we're thinking about starting to use the teeth. T360, the Dominguez riding crop. I was just brought to my attention today. But you need a riding crop. Very good point, Richie. Once again, you prove that you're more astute than me. You might have had some injuries to your neck, but I think I did something and hit the ground. I had too many concussions.
though, it's interesting what you bring up about the gate, too, Tony. We know, yes. Horses sometimes will break left or break right. And I'm under the impression that years ago, we used to have to handle a lot of our own horses in the gate. They would put you in the gate, the assistant starter would get out, and if the horse needed help, you had to ask the starter, sir, I need a hand in here. And then someone would get back in and help you if the starter deemed that you actually needed help. So you learn to handle your horse in the gate and have them standing square, have them looking down the racetrack, and have their weight distributed. So many of the kids nowadays, every single horse gets handled, and they're so reliant on the assistant that their horses aren't as balanced. So you're going to see horses break left and right more. And now the stewards have created this environment. Well, it's out of the gate, so they don't feel the necessity to straighten up as quick as we know they can.
Absolutely. You make a very good point there. And you know what happens to guys like us? We start, when we talk just what you're saying, we get called dinosaurs. You guys are old school. It ain't like that no more. I've heard that a million times. You know,
yeah,
but,
me too.
And you kind of understand it. Because I don't think we said that to the old guys that were old riders when we were riding. Because there was a respect level that's different, you know, and we learned from these older, established riders, the Walter Blums and the Garth Pattersons, and I can name a zillion of them, Danny Gargan, guys that you were around. You know, we learned from them. It just seems like jocks rooms don't all have someone in there that takes these kids under their wing and maybe teaches them, and maybe that's... Maybe I'm old school, and that's what they're accusing me of. If anybody's listening to the radio about what I'm saying,
yeah,
that, you
but
know
Tony,
what, old school wasn't too bad.
No, I'm the same way as you, and something you just said really struck a chord with me. You know, there's people that I still rely on their opinion. I still look up to. Bill Boland was the youngest rider to ever win the Kentucky Derby Middle Ground for King Ranch. He actually claimed foul in a Kentucky Derby when he rode Sword Dancer and Tommy Lee came out and bumped him in the stretch. He went on to a successful training career. When he was training for Timber Bay Stable, I was one of his main riders, and he really took me under his wing, taught me a lot. I really was a father figure, a mentor. Went on to a successful career after that as a racing official. His take on this was, he would have left it alone, should have never come down. And here's a guy who won the Derby, was a trainer, claimed foul in the Derby, was a racing official, and that was his take on it.
Well, and, you know, these guys, these stewards were handed, a tough decision to be made. And, you know, Steve, I heard you talk about it was the mutuals who could have held this up and all that. No, I can't buy that, Steve. 22 and a half minutes, 23 minutes is not the mutuals. They were trying to weigh the scenarios. You had the Commissioner Stewart that was in the stand, the lady, I forget her name. She's the Commission, Stewart for the Commission. And, you know, I think they came right down to saying, well, we can justify taking him down by a rule that we will strictly go by. And that's what they did. And I think that they made they misevaluated the situation, and they made a mistake. They'd have been much better off letting the public get paid. Let's not put another black mark in racing where they say, oh, look, the best horse won, we don't get paid. The same way I think there was a Santa Anita influence on harrowing that track instead of keeping it floated. I mean, the game's under a microscope right now, and I think some people cave in to the pressure of that microscope, and some people do the job as they know they've done it over the years, and it's worked out. I think this day at the Derby, it didn't work out. The track should have been sealed right up to race time, not harrowed while it's pouring raining or while the rain was forecasted. That was the Santa Anita effect, and I think this was also the disqualification was the effect of the commission and maybe what I call and determine as the Santa Anita effect. It's wrong. I hope they go back to having confidence in what they've done over the years that has worked. Let's not cave in to pressure. And Rich will tell
right.
us, jocks don't always cave in to pressure. They handle it every day, sometimes 8, 9 races a day. If you won yesterday riding in a certain way, you can win today riding the same way. Don't change things dramatically because something that has occurred that you are not directly connected to other than horse racing. That's what you're connected to.
And that's the danger of allowing outside entities or people that don't have the necessary knowledge in our industry to get involved in the decision-making in our industry. We,
right.
Like you said, we have to have confidence and what we do, what we know, and not be influenced or swayed by those outside sources. And that's the question now, Steve. Don't you believe if this was last year, let's say, the outcome might have been different as far as the stewards' ruling?
Well, I'm hearing that question left and right, not just in that frame of reference, but also, if it was Country House that finished first, they never would have taken him down because it was my. I don't buy that. I mean,
I'm not buying into that. No,
I know anecdotally they're and I point to one particular anecdote where I personally felt that years ago, the 2006 Black Eyed Susan, when Dale Romans and Smart and Pretty was taken down, and Norberto Arroyo for just brushing by Ramon Dominguez, and it was bizarre that went by like a freight train and just brushed Dominguez. And even Ramon said there was no way we were winning. And they put Ramon up and took Arroyo down. And it felt like, reputation oriented to me. But that's the only one I think of on that front. I do want to bring up one topic that is coming, that came to me. And you referenced it, Tony, about the riding crop issue. Apparently the Oaks and Derby riders, and I'll try to get the specifics of this, apparently they rode the Derby and the Oaks with the Nerf whips.
The T360, wasn't it? The Dominguez whip, the one that's the high-density foam for the popper?
Apparently.
Listen, you want to change something like that? I'm all for it, because that'll serve the same purpose as a leather-padded popper. Horses run from the movement of the stick. They run from the feel of it, not the sensation of pain. But you're moving your hands, you're reaching back, and you're touching them with the stick. You could go back and tap a horse on his butt while he's walking around, and you might get your head kicked off. They react to sensation, not necessarily pain, just sensation, just quick movement. They react to it. They react to the touch of the sensation. When I pat a horse on his butt and he kicks at me, what, did I hurt him? No, he's reacting to sensation, to touch. And that's why I think these T360 Dominguez whips, whatever they are, I don't even know, I got to call them on today, they're a good change. If you want to look at all the different scenarios, I had someone walk up to me and say, boy, service has really had a bad weekend. Jaywalk wound up, I guess she didn't hit the board, but she got taken down. And then Jason gets taken down. One gets taken down to Oaks, but didn't matter of when. And the other one gets taken down in the Derby from when. I thought, well, so what's that mean? What, they don't want services in Kentucky?
I never thought in my lifetime I would see a horse get disqualified in the Derby for a racing infraction. I know it really is still hard for me, and thinking about Luis Saez, and I interviewed him yesterday, and I just don't know how you he's dealing with it so well, and he's a kid that's been through a lot. But I personally think I might be in a rubber room right now.
I'd be right there with you if it was both of us, because this is an unbelievable occurrence. But the other thing I don't agree with, and I know maybe Steve, you got a different thought, field size. I rode in a four-horse field in the Black Eyed Susan one year. It was four-horse field, and every one of us bothered the other one at some point of the race.
Sure.
Danny Gargan, me, I think Passmore, I forget the four riders. But I rode a horse for Guamazon Farm. I think I finished third. I forget what I even finished. But everybody got bothered at one point of the race. The Derby with 20 horses, I think, that's okay for 19 horses. And one year I was supposed to ride in it, there was 21 in the entry scratch, so it was 20. And I think one year, if I'm not correct,
74.
It ran 23.
Yeah, with Little Current, when Little Current was seventh, too much
Miguel
traffic.
Rivera. And yep. Miguel Rivera comes back and wins the Preakness on him, Little Current. So,
yep.
But
yep. And the Belmont.
20, and the Belmont.
Again, but it was 23 horses.
But they want to do something to make it safer, Tony. Get a starting gate that accommodates everybody. Don't have two different gates.
100%. One special 20 stall gate for the Derby absolutely would solve some problems at the start of the race. We're going to pull up, boys. I can't thank you enough. I mean, just what we needed. Your perspective, having ridden in Derbies and knowing what's going on out there. I appreciate it.
Well, thank
Steve,
you.
Steve, thanks, Tony. Good to hear from you. Talk to you guys.
Always good to hear from you, Rich. Take care.
Rich Migliori, of course, with the Sport of Kings Media, Sport of Kings 4 on Twitter, and Richard Migliori under his name, Richard Migliori, to follow Rich. We're going to pull up. We'll talk to Tony probably later in the week, but I wanted to get this and get the rider perspective as soon as we could. And, of course, we also heard from Rusty Arnold, Brett Calhoun, Johnny D, Tom Amos on the Oaks win, Dave Grenig with reporting, and Andy Beyer. Much more day two tomorrow. That'll include Steve Asmussen, I expect we'll get to tomorrow, and much, much more. Brad Cox, Andy Serling, John White, others. We'll get some more reports in, more analysis. Catch up with, I think, Flavian Pratt, too. He was on TV this morning. He had early morning call, so probably talk to Flavian. And this will continue. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. We'll talk to you live at 9 a.m. Thanks.